Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jadakin.
Hey, Desi, what's up?
Not much. How are you?
Well, before we thank our... let's just thank our patrons first.
Oh, okay. We got some new patrons, because I can never say that word. I'm very sorry. Patrons. Why do I always want to be like patron?
Because you're French.
So I'm going to thank them this week. We have Justin, Paige, Frank, Richie, Porter, Sarah, Dawn, Paula, Raul. There's no U in it, so I'm confused, but I hope I said it right. You can yell at me. Whitney, Tiffany, Samuel. That's it.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thanks so
really
much.
Appreciate it. So
first thing, I have a couple of things up top.
Okay.
The first thing I want to talk about is probably the saddest thing I've ever seen. The saddest story I've come across probably since Dear Zachary. And that is Desi's Instagram story from this past week. A couple days ago, might have been yesterday, I don't know. It's all been a blur since I saw it.
Oh, wow.
Desi posted a step-by-step process of her baking bread. And I'm flipping through these videos that Desi's posted all in chronological order of this process.
Right.
From the rising of the dough to the kneading of the dough to the baking of the bread. And finally we get to this final story and it's the bread and it's baked and it's gorgeous and it's golden and it has a beautiful crumb, as Paul Hollywood would say from British Bake Off. But it has a caption. And the caption on the picture of the baked bread says, "And I'm not going to eat the bread because I'm on a diet." I fell apart when I read that. It was a tragic story.
That bread takes a long time to make because you have to let it rise naturally. So it takes like 15 hours. I know. It's tragic.
It's but fucking
I have to bake a lot because I'm not eating bad foods, but I still like baking because it's very soothing for me.
I get it. I'm a baker too. So I
just give it away to all my people. And I have had several people say, "I'll take some of that." And it's like, "Well, fuck you. I don't know you." But yeah, so hopefully.
No, I get it. I bake too for
stress.
You
know what? I was trying to figure out Instagram stories because I hadn't used them ever.
Right.
Because the process frightened me for some reason. And then I'm trying to figure it out. And now I'm sort of into the cooking ones. So
yeah,
I
like them.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like fucking ripped my heart out, but I really like.
Well, I'll eat again. I mean, this is just a temporary thing, hopefully.
She's not doing a lot of carbs right now.
Yeah.
She's eating. She's just not doing
right.
a lot of
Don't
carbs.
Don't worry. I'm not starving. I'm not eating those Kim Kardashian appetite suppressant lollipops.
That was enraging.
Yeah, very.
So the other thing I wanted to bring up is I finally watched Evil Genius this week.
Okay.
Desi and I briefly talked about it on Twitter, about Marjorie Deal, who this story is essentially about.
It's her story.
It's her story.
Yeah.
She's the evil genius.
Is she a genius, though?
Well, I didn't see a lot of evidence that she was a genius.
I'm just saying, sure, it's like you hear the story on paper. She got all these men to do her bidding, her evil bidding.
Right.
But when you see the men, it's not as impressive as it sounds.
There it is.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I can see wanting to have that skill, but I would try to pick top tier men for it. Like, these men did not seem that hard to trick.
No. And if you have a name like Cocaine Ken, first of all, as someone who was probably referred to a lot as Cocaine Barbie back in the day, I was very disappointed in how not hot Cocaine Ken was.
Right. I mean, that's not living up to the potential of Cocaine Ken.
Right. You can't call yourself that if you
look
like that.
You gotta think he's even like, he's not even like John Holmes hot.
No.
Like, it's just nothing.
He was just really sad looking. They were all sad people.
Really sad. Did you? So you liked it though?
Of course, I liked it.
It's only four episodes.
Right. Like, I knew the case. I actually had just like a week ago before the show came out, or whenever it was, like a week before the show came out, I actually had listened to a podcast about it on Case File. Do you know that one?
Yeah, I do.
I sometimes listen to that podcast. Mm-hmm. It's aight. And so I like was really like, it was fresh in my mind, that story. Yes. So there wasn't any like twists or turns for me about how it was going to go.
Right. I knew the story too.
Except for the last episode with the woman who was talking.
Right.
Which I felt that was really cool that they got that interview.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't really surprised.
No one was likable except for her. She was the one likable person.
Definitely.
In the whole thing.
I think the other interesting thing that I was reminded of recently is that there was a movie based on this that was like a black comedy.
Oh, and they got in trouble.
Because it was called 30 Minutes or Less. I pulled it up. But it's like, it's Jesse Eisenberg and Danny McBride. I mean, it's insane to me that they tried to make a dark comedy out of that story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Pretty like, tragic story.
It's not an exact retelling, but it's definitely based on the most identifiable aspect of that story. Like,
right. That it's a pizza delivery guy
who has a bomb strapped to him. Yeah.
Right.
But just dark comedy. And I'm all for dark comedy, but I just feel like this one is too. Come
also,
on.
Jesse Eisenberg, a lot more fuckable than.
Oh God! I mean,
anyone in
that's a glow up casting if I've ever seen one.
Right. So yeah, I watched that. Did you like it?
Yeah, of course. I mean,
I like any like true crime thing that comes on Netflix.
If it's remotely well done, I'm gonna be into it.
Right.
Usually, the only time I don't like a true crime documentary is when it's just really low budget,
right,
or something like that. And even then, I might still, if the story is good.
Yeah. I'm like very new to the Duplass brothers fandom.
Okay.
Like I just became a fan of their work ever since I saw their horror movie Creep. Which is a great movie. It's on Netflix. The reason I like it so much is because there's penis in it. And I feel like there's just not enough penis in films.
Okay.
So I want to give them a shout out for that.
Cool. Right. I'm hooked.
I tweeted that actually. And one of the Duplass brothers liked the tweet.
Oh.
So I'm just bragging right now.
Okay. the saddest name drop ever.
I just want to like put that out into the universe that I like full frontal male nudity in my in my media, and they did that, so thank you. Okay, should we get to our main story?
Yes, I'm excited.
Desi.
Yes.
When you think of the greatest lines in cinema history, would you think of things like "Here's looking at you, kid," from Casablanca? Would you think of "Life is like a box of chocolates"? you never know what you're going to get from Forrest Gump.
Right.
Or do you think about "Your mother sucks cocks in hell"?
Of course. Rachel, come on.
I personally think that that is one of the greatest lines in all of cinema.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, it's right up there with like, would you fuck me?
I'd fuck me. So anyway, we're going to be talking about the Exorcist film and the alleged curse that surrounds this film. We've done on the show before, we've talked about Poltergeist and that movie curse. We've talked about The Omen. So now we're going to be talking about the Exorcist. Exorcist is pretty much considered by like film critics, I guess I would say, like all across the board, like the best horror movie of all time. It was actually the first horror movie to be nominated for Best Picture, and it was nominated for 10 Academy Awards. It took home 2. Ellen Burstyn was nominated for Best Actress. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
She's so good.
I love her.
She's such a good actress, and she's so good in this movie. I watched the movie over the weekend or over the week to like get reacquainted with it. And I hadn't seen it in like forever. That movie's fucking terrifying.
It's really good.
I don't know how it came out in 1973. Like it blows my mind.
It took me a really long time to see that movie in full. I think I had only seen it on cable. So it's like severely edited. And then, I can't remember, maybe 5 years ago, it was re-released in theaters, and I went to see it finally for the first time. And I was terrified. I was scared.
This was my first time, I think, seeing it in its entirety, not on TV, heavily edited down.
Right.
And I had to turn it off halfway through at one point.
It's really scary.
It's fucking terrifying. Like, some of the imagery in it. I was actually looking, because I was, like, just doing, I was, like, looking at all these, like, fun facts about the movie, and I saw how they almost, like, the makeup they almost used for Reagan when she's the demon.
Right.
And it was so not fucking scary. She's kind of like a werewolf.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that they went with what they went with, because that is, like, chilling.
It's an iconic image.
It's iconic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So The Exorcist was actually originally a novel. It was a best-selling novel. And the novel was actually based on a real life, I'm putting that in loosely, real life, but it was a real life newspaper article that this case allegedly happened. In 1949, a 14-year-old boy known as Ronald Doe had been possessed by a demon and was successfully exorcised by a team of priests in the town of Mount Rainier, Maryland. According to Ronald's family, he began experiencing symptoms of his possession after the death of his aunt, who was a spiritualist who had given the boy a Ouija board to play with. Now,
sorry.
I didn't even know they had Ouija boards around in that long.
Really?
I mean, they're
old school.
But they're made by Parker Brothers.
Well, not all of them.
Well, was it like a thing before Parker Brothers?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Okay.
I mean, it's like an old... Well, I don't know how old, but I mean, yeah.
Okay.
It's been around forever.
All right.
Like, there are hardcore versions. It's not just like the board that it you was fold like
a,
up.
Was it? I was wondering, was it like a, did they like gentrify Ouija board?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. All right. So he, I guess this kid was close to his aunt who was like super spiritual.
Right.
They just describe her as a spiritualist, whatever the fuck that means. But she gave him this Ouija board and he was into it. And actually in the movie The Exorcist, Reagan is playing with a Ouija board in one scene. So this aunt dies, and then the boy starts to experience possessions, changes in behavior and such. The family also described strange noises in the house, as well as furniture and objects moving, vases flying around whenever Ronald was around. So Ronald was taken to a psychiatric hospital in St. Louis, Missouri, to be cared for by both doctors and priests. One of the priests who aided in the boy's exorcism was Father Walter Halloran. He was called to help by another priest, Father William Bowden, who had been treating the young boy. The boy would go into a seizure and get quite violent, Father Halloran told the St. Louis Post-Dispatch in 1988. And Father Halloran also said that he broke his nose at one point during one of his violent fits.
Ronald broke his nose.
Yeah, the little boy. So, like, just how Reagan in the movie is violent towards these priests, this kid was a little shit. Or the demon possessing him was a little shit.
The demon was an asshole. He didn't care about the priest.
He was a real handful. The little boy also allegedly would have markings that would appear on his body.
Okay.
Like the words hell and evil.
They would just sear out.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Like in the movie when it says help me.
Yeah.
On Reagan's stomach.
That's really creepy.
It's so fucking creepy. Yeah. I mean, I feel like those words are really over the top. Like that's just like so on the nose.
To say hell?
If you're a demon, don't you want to say something maybe in Latin so it's a little more cryptic? You just straight up say hell.
Hell. I'm a demon. Boo.
Right.
There is this weird thing where I do feel like demons are smart, but maybe they aren't.
Maybe he got a stupid demon.
Yeah.
I mean, not a very creative one.
We don't know.
Totally.
Could be all levels.
I mean, mine might just say like, chalupas, please. Feed me chalupas. In 1949, the Washington Post ran a front page story. I could not believe that this made front page news.
Right.
I mean, I guess to be fair, back then people were even dumber than they are now.
What? I don't know.
This is something I wonder about all the time. Like,
I mean, it's an interesting story, right?
Yeah, right. I guess so.
I don't know. Whether or not you believe it's really true.
It's interesting that someone would claim.
The story itself is interesting,
right.
I think.
Right. Uh-huh. But it was front page news of the Washington Post. And the story said, priest frees Mount Rainier boy reportedly held in devil's grip. This article caught the attention of writer William Peter Blatty, who was a student at Georgetown University at the time. The article described the manifestations of the boy's possession. This is a quote from the article. The boy broke into a violent tantrum of screaming, cursing, and voicing of Latin phrases, a language he had never studied. The final rite of exorcism in which the devil was cast from the boy took place in May, it was reported, and since then he has had no manifestations. So they cured him, and he went on to lead a normal life.
Cool.
So, yeah. But as I said before, the person reading that article was William Peter Blatty, and he would go on to write the novel The Exorcist, which, as I also said before, went on to become a bestseller.
Right.
Let's talk about The Curse. It was then made into a movie. This book was wildly popular, and the filming of The Exorcist had to be delayed because the set of the McNeil's home, where a lot of the film takes place, it caught on fire. And it seemed pretty mysterious. The director, William Friedkin, said he thought it was a pigeon that might have flown into the wiring and messed it up. So that's not that weird or creepy, but the creepy thing about it was that everything was destroyed except for Reagan's room.
Oh.
That was left untouched.
That is creepy.
Yeah. That's weird.
Right.
Okay. Another thing that happened during filming was Ellen Burstyn injured her back when Linda Blair struck her down in a scene. And that is her real scream of pain.
Right.
In that scene. It's the scene right before she turns her head around for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
She like strikes her to the ground. That, yeah. I mean, it is a blood curdling.
That movie is physically violent. Like you could tell violent. That the actors are really in it.
And they went through it. Those actors. I mean, this wasn't like a full on Kubrick, like abuse your actors situation. But I did read some things where William Friedkin did kind of push them to the limits to sort of get
reactions.
Well,
to make it look real, there's almost no way other way to do it, I think.
Yeah. You know? Like, so Ellen Burstyn still has back problems to this day. Like, that fucked up her shit.
Right. Once you injure your back, it's really hard to recover.
Oh, my God. Totally. Also during production, Jason Miller, who plays Father Karras, was randomly approached by a priest while he was having lunch. And the priest said to him, "Reveal the devil for the trickster that he is. He will seek retribution against you, or he will even try to stop what you are trying to do to unmask him." Look, I don't like when anyone interrupts my lunch. But if a religious person came up to me and started talking religious stuff to me while I was eating lunch, I'd be fucking furious.
Right. I mean, that's a pretty insane thing to say to somebody.
And I would not remember exactly what he said that.
No.
I don't even remember what I just said, and I just said it. So this was sort of like the foreshadowing, like, don't film this movie.
Yeah.
9 people connected to this film died before it was released. And that includes Jack McGowran, who plays Burke Dennings in the film. He died of a heart attack at the age of 52 just before the film came out. And Burke dies in the film itself. He plays the drunken director. He's hilarious. It's a fucking hilarious part. He's like shit-faced.
I love the Hollywood aspects, like her life as an actress.
Right. I wanted to see more of that. Everyone's asking her for her autograph.
Right.
Okay, this is fucking crazy. So the voice of the devil in the film, the one who says my favorite line, your mother sucks cocks in hell, that's done by an actress named Mercedes McCambridge.
Right, I know who she is.
That voice is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, she's a great actress.
Yeah, she's won an Oscar.
Yeah, right.
And she's like a stage actress too, I believe. Or she was.
Yeah.
So she had a son named John Markle. John Markle and his family moved to Little Rock, Arkansas, where he was VP of Stevens Inc. and worked as a futures trader. On November 16th, 1987, at 2:30 a.m., Markle put on a Halloween mask and went upstairs where his two daughters...
Wait, what year?
1987. So this is like like 15 years after the movie came out. But this is fucking creepy.
Okay.
I mean, and she had, I would consider Mercedes Markle, that's a pretty big part in the film, even though you don't see her face.
Right. She's the voice. Integral part, yeah.
She's the voice of the demon. So this is a story about her son. So her son, John Markle, put on a Halloween mask and went upstairs where his two daughters and wife were asleep. He then shot his 13-year-old daughter, Amy, 4 times. Next, he shot his 9-year-old daughter, Suzanne, 5 times, and he shot his wife, 45-year-old Christina, 3 times. He then phoned his attorney, Richard Lawrence, and told him to come over, which has to be the worst you up in history.
Right. I'm just curious why he was wearing a Halloween mask. Since he wasn't trying to, like...
It's so dramatic.
Right. It's so extra.
I mean, and this is, like, 16 days after Halloween.
Right. I mean...
What are you doing?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Put your turkey mask on.
Okay, so he calls the lawyer?
He calls the lawyer and is like, dude, you got to come over right now. John then went downstairs to his study, sat down at his desk, and wrote a note. And this is what the note said. Let it hereby be stated as true that I, John L. Markle, murdered my wife and 2 children, Amy and Suzanne, then committed suicide myself. My wife had no knowledge or part in this. I think the evidence shall so provide. That is really formal.
Right. It's like he's writing a contract.
Right.
The party of the first part. Like what?
I got confused. Just
I mean,
it.
No one, everyone's going to believe you.
Right.
No one thought your wife was in on it. Like, right. Oh, you just have to
we
say
get
it. We're not going to, we're not going to arrest her. Like she's safe. She's dead. Like, come on. Like,
well, and also then he shot himself in the head twice. Right.
I mean, it was nice of him to be worried about her reputation, I guess. Like,
and it's just so formal.
Yeah. The writing of that is very formal. You'd think you'd be a little more emotional during that moment.
Right.
That you wouldn't be all, I don't know.
You'd forget all the hereby's and the commas.
I never heard that story.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So he shot himself in the head twice with 2 different guns.
What?
Which is crazy to me.
Did he just graze the first time?
Right. And then, oh, I better use this gun.
Bring out the big gun.
Jesus Christ. So when his attorney arrived, because he told his attorney to come over, he arrived at 4:15 a.m. I don't know what took him so long. He found John Markle dead in his study with the note and the Halloween mask covered in blood. So pretty grim scene that he's walking into. Yeah. Also in the house was a VHS tape of Friday the 13th that was found in the VCR. Like, this guy just went all out to be as creepy as possible.
Yeah. That's weird.
What, he put like a cobweb in the door frame?
One of those Halloween mixtapes where it's like creepy sounds.
The creaky door.
So weird. It's like, honestly, like, I'm not trying to give this guy tips, but if you're going to do it on Halloween. Like, come on. Like,
that's what I'm saying. It's like
if you're going to go all fucking creepy, come on. Or wait till next year. I don't know.
Well, Desi, he was going through some shit.
Okay.
Clearly.
Yeah.
The motive for the murder-suicide turned out to be financially related.
Right.
And mommy related, too.
Oh.
He had some mommy issues. Mm-hmm. So it ties back into his mother. A 12-page letter found in John Markle's home detailed his disdain for his mother.
Wow.
He claimed that Mercedes McCambridge was basically responsible for all his problems.
Ugh.
I read some of these notes that he had left, and it was like, I tried, mother, I tried to be your perfect little boy.
Ugh.
And like stuff like, I was never good enough for you, and you were a famous actress, and da-da-da. Like just these weird,
right,
mommy didn't love me, and
barf.
Yeah. And so John was a bad boy, though. He did some bad things, or some dishonest things, I guess, that got him into some financial trouble. Basically, he had like embezzled money or cheated money from his company by like funneling it into some fund for his mom. And then when he got caught and fired at his company, and like he had like lost like $4 million or
was
something.
Was she still
crazy.
Alive when this happened?
Yes.
Okay.
He told her about it and was like, mom, I need help. I need money. And she's like, no, you fucking got yourself into this mess.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you money.
I'm your good boy.
I'm your good little boy. So basically, he was pissed off at that. So he's going to write this scathing note to his mom.
This note that they found, the right. additional one.
Another thing that was found was, "You were never around much when I needed you. So now I and my whole family are dead. So you can have the money. Funny how things work out, isn't it?"
He showed her.
God, like,
I'm so, there's nothing that irritates me more than men who kill their whole family because they fucked up financially.
Oh my God.
It's like the most enraging fucking
so
baby.
It's so selfish.
It's so selfish. It's like, kill yourself, jerk. Like, fuck off. Like, right. God.
Ugh. Even then, it's like, oh, so you're leaving them with all this pain and debt? Like,
But that's the better alternative.
Of course,
like,
the
I
better.
Mean,
right.
Like, come on. Ugh,
fucking
it's
sucks.
So irritating.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So another person connected to the film was involved in some murder, and this is fucking creepy. In the scene where Reagan is undergoing various tests at the hospital, William Friedkin, the director, decided to use real-life tech Paul Bateson in the scene. So this guy's playing one of the hospital techs when she's going through, like, the x-ray and shit like that. Though Paul only appeared briefly in the film, he went on to gain some infamy when he was arrested and convicted for a 1979 murder in Manhattan. Paul picked up film critic Addison Verrill in a gay bar in Greenwich Village and took him back to his place where they had sex. Paul then beat Addison with a skillet and stabbed him in the heart, killing him.
What?
Have you ever heard of anyone outside of a cartoon beating someone to death with a skillet?
No. Also, how did that escalate so quickly? Like, what? Like, how? I mean, not that murder ever really makes sense, but something like that seems so not planned. Like, do you
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
Like, a stranger murder to me is very odd when it's related to, like, a sex. You have sex and it's like a hookup.
Right.
Well, was there any? Did he have a reason for what happened?
No, he didn't have a reason. And this wasn't necessarily an isolated incident either. So it could have just been he's a fucking crazy serial killer.
Right, right.
So basically what Paul did after he killed Addison was he dismembered him.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
This is very Michael Alec.
He dismembered this guy. Then he put him into plastic bags and dumped them into the Hudson River. And while Paul was awaiting trial at Rikers Island, he bragged to the other inmates about the other gay men that he had picked up around town and killed. During 1977 and 1978, at least six bodies were found in plastic bags, all chopped up and mutilated, and one of the bags washed up in New Jersey. So when this guy confessed to murdering this film critic guy, they were like, oh, he must be responsible.
Yeah.
For these six other murders.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Like, this is a serial killer case.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there was not enough evidence to convict him of the six murders besides the one he confessed to. So he was only sentenced to 20 years. And he was released in 2004. And he lives in upstate New York.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy that someone who murdered someone, like at least one person, probably six other people, is just like a free guy.
Yeah.
Hanging out.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
So he was just a random extra, almost border, like one step above in the movie.
Right. Like, he's not, like, you can see him. You don't have to, like, pause it and look for him.
Yeah.
He plays like a tech. So once again, William Friedkin was inspired by a real life horror story, and so he went on to direct the 1980 film Cruising, which starred Al Pacino as a cop who went undercover to solve a string of murders of gay men, much like the bag murders, as these plastic bag part murders were called. William Friedkin even visited and interviewed Paul Bateson in prison during the production of the film.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of
That's crazy.
Interesting. He might have even, it was like some people said, like, oh, he like helped with a lot of stuff.
Like as a resource for the movie.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Obviously, Desi and I are not old enough to have seen The Exorcist when it came out in the theaters, but this is one of those movies that has so much of the movie is attached to the lore of when it first opened and the audience reaction and just the country's reaction to this film.
Right.
I remember before I, long, long before I'd ever seen the movie when I was a little kid, I had a babysitter who was old enough to had, she had seen the film when it came out when she was a teenager. And she told me that she ran home after, like from the theater. She was right. Fucking terrified. Like she wanted to get home as quickly as possible after seeing it. And that put like an instant imprint in my mind of what kind of movie right. this was.
Right.
Like my mom, I talked to my mom today. I was like, did you see it in the theater? She was like, oh God, no.
No, people were terrified.
You're fucking terrified. But conversely, because there was so much hype around how scary this movie was, people were also so pumped about it. And this movie sold out everywhere.
Right.
Like you could not get into a showing. There were lines wrapped. It was like Star Wars.
When I saw it 5 years ago or whatever that was, it was also sold out.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think because a lot of people had never seen it in the theater.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and it does make a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you seeing a movie in a theater when you have a good audience makes all the difference.
Yeah. Like, especially for something like that, I think. Like horror movies in particular.
Oh, yeah.
I love seeing in the theater.
I saw my favorite movie-going experience ever was in 2011 when Scream 4 came out.
Okay.
And I'm a huge fan of that whole franchise. I love those movies. And I was like, I went with like me, my friend Jules, and like 10 gay guys. Like we were all in a play together and we all went to go see Scream. And we went to go see it at the Arclight and the entire theater was packed. And it was all these people dressed up, like men dressed as in Gail Weathers drag and right. men dressed in Drew Barrymore drag. And like, it was like, they were like, it was like diehard Scream fans. Like we went to go see it opening at midnight.
Yeah.
That, I mean like that movie was scary. Scream 4 was scary, but it's also hilarious because it was a Scream film.
Yeah.
So everyone is roaring with laughter while we're seeing the movie. I mean, it was just so fun.
Yeah.
Like, and I actually rewatched the movie on like Netflix or whatever, like a couple years ago or some streaming site a couple years ago. And I was like, I wonder if it's going to be as good. And it is. The movie still yeah. holds up. But I'm convinced that like that made me love the movie like as much as I do.
Yeah.
It was such a good experience. Like it really does make all the difference. So I can only imagine seeing a film like this, which already is such a good film, whether you're watching it by yourself or with a bunch of people, I can't imagine like how crazy that must have been in these packed theaters.
Yeah.
Especially
back then where you're not oversaturated with horror.
No.
Like now we have so much. It's hard for me to find a horror movie that actually does anything anymore.
Right. Like, right. And also like the thing that trips me out about this movie being so old is like the stuff that's in the movie, not just the language, but like her stabbing herself in the pussy with the crucifix.
Right.
That's fucking hardcore.
Well, this movie also had like a lot of like what would be considered like viral campaigning, like word right. of mouth type stuff.
Right.
Because I think it was banned by the Catholic Church. Like,
oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It had like all those things where it was like that marketing where it's like, you'll be too petrified to leave. Like, oh, you know what I mean? People are screaming and leaving the theater.
Right.
Like, it had all of that kind of, you know.
I
think it's also coming after a period of horror films in like the 60s and the late 60s that were definitely like a little bit more, I mean, there were good ones, but it was like, there was like more cheesy and kind of campy
right.
type horror. And this right. was definitely more real, like a Rosemary's Baby type.
It was shocking. You know what I mean? Like, it was shocking. And Rosemary's Baby, while it was shocking for the time, has nothing on this in terms of shock.
Well, it wasn't horror. Rosemary's Baby isn't like hardcore horror.
Well, it's not like hardcore gore, I would say. I would say it's a horror movie.
I mean, it's a horror movie in like a thriller kind of like subtle, more subtle, I think.
Psychological.
Like, yeah, it's like a psychological horror film rather than...
But this is fucking
This is scary insane. And monster. Even though the devil is in Rosemary's Baby, this is more, I don't know.
It's different. Yeah, it's different. It's different. And
it's more of a shock screaming. Like, I didn't scream in Rosemary's Baby get petrified. Like, yeah. It's creepy.
I had today, like this weekend, I had to turn it off halfway through. I'm like, I need to watch this in the daytime, the rest of this. And I did. I was like, this is too fucked up right now. I can't handle it. And yeah, this was, I mean, I don't know if someone film Twitter fucking correct me if I'm wrong. This was like an early example of like viral marketing and how they really capitalized on that. I watched a 20-minute compilation video of stuff from the 70s. It was like a promo video for the movie that came out in 1974, and it was basically interviews with theatergoers and news clips from 1974, shortly after the movie came out, of like, you know, the movie that's shocking the nation, and all these interviews with people. Like, there was this one girl who was like, I couldn't tell if she was laughing or crying or just really high, but she was like nestling in her friend's like bosom, basically like, I almost passed out, man. Right. That movie was, oh my God. Like, I mean, they do that today all the time. Like, I remember when Paranormal Activity first came out.
Right. It's like, don't tell the secrets, right? Like, don't tell us. Yeah.
The trailers for that movie is just the audience reaction.
Right.
And they're all like, whoa. Yeah. In the audience. I actually never saw Paranormal Activity.
I did.
Did you actually like it?
I did like it. I got physically ill because I can't take handheld camera films.
Yeah.
Like, they make me sick.
Right.
So I could only open my eyes during the scary parts. And it was scary.
Yeah.
Someone actually did faint in the theater when I saw it. Yeah. And an ambulance came. They
Holy
didn't die or anything.
Shit.
Yeah. And that was maybe the last time I saw a movie where it was like this scary experience. I went home that night and I was petrified.
Whoa.
Like, I kept thinking about, because there was like an alternate ending that was even more scary, and I read about it before I went to sleep.
Nice.
Because I'm an idiot.
I relate.
And I could not go to sleep. That's how terrified it got me, that movie. I don't even know if it might be a stupid movie. It could have just been my mood, and I was like alone in this house. And like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like all this combination and stuff.
Right,
things.
Right.
But I was terrified
when
that
you
night.
Psych yourself out like that.
Yeah,
it's just like a spiral.
I don't even know if it's a good movie, like, quite honestly. I can't even remember what it's about. And I never saw any of the other versions.
Right. Well, everyone loved it. It was a huge hit, and everyone loved it. Here's my thing. I love horror movies, but I will not go to see any movie where there are reports, even just rumors, of people passing out or fainting.
There's no gore in it, but it is creepy, that movie. It's one of those movies I feel like would not hold up for me if I saw it again.
Right.
Like, I feel like there's a lot of horror movies that fit that bill for me. Like, there's very few that I like. But, like, Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby, like, classics, they'll hold up.
Right.
But these ones that kind of have this huge splash and then they make five more to capitalize on it, they're just always sort of like a Blair Witch type thing. Like, you know?
Right.
Like, eh, okay.
I saw Blair Witch in the theaters.
I saw that in the theaters, too.
That actually was such an example of that hype before the movie came out.
Oh, right. Totally.
Because I was 13 when that came out, and I was so fucking stoked on seeing that movie.
Me too.
I saw it opening weekend or whenever with my best friend. We were fucking pumped because no one really knew. This is like before like a lot of internet, like, you know,
definitely.
Stuff. So like, no, there was all these rumors that it was, no, this is real.
Yeah.
And that was like the first big mainstream found footage movie too.
Yeah, definitely.
There wasn't really any of that. So there were all these rumors circulating like, oh, this footage is real. This is like, this really happened. So you're kind of like, wait, is this? Is it not? And it was just like a mind fuck seeing that movie because I had never seen anything else like it before.
Right.
I really liked it. And now it's like it's like beyond parody now at this point.
Yes.
Like,
I think I liked it fine, but I wasn't blown away by it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might have seen it too late.
I also think I convinced myself that after I saw it, that it was scarier than it was because I had hyped myself so much about it. Where I was like, yeah, it was really fucking
good. For me,
good.
Scary movies are a lot of my expectation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if I go into something overhyped, I'll tend to buckle up and be like,
they're not going to scare me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm like, the expectation games really fuck with me. Like,
yeah.
I almost want to know nothing about a movie before I see it.
Right.
But, yeah.
I'm in that camp too. Like, I don't watch trailers of movies I really want to see anymore.
Right.
I like knowing nothing about it. I didn't know anything about A Quiet Place before I saw it. Yeah. I muted A Quiet Place on Twitter, so I didn't read anyone's fucking dumb jokes about it. So.
Crunch, crunch. Oh, is she going to open up a wrapped candy?
What happens when she has to fart?
I saw that joke
I saw
about
that like
100
times too. And yeah. I was just like, okay, I don't want to see this movie. Like, it did make me not want to see it because it's like, well, now I'm going to think about that the whole time.
That's why I had to mute it, because then I read all the dumb, lame Twitter jokes afterwards. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I like the movie so much anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it was good.
Yeah.
It was very tense. I like those tense movies. But if, like I said before, if there's a rumor that a movie makes you pass out when you watch it, I won't see it. And I'll see some fucked up movies. But for some reason, that is like the horror movie line for me. And even like...
I'll see it if it's like a scary pass out, but not a gore or fucked up like human centipede pass out type thing.
I'm prone to fainting.
Okay.
Like I'm prone to that. And I'm prone to like losing like lightheadedness and shit. So that's like, no, I hate that feeling.
Yeah.
Like I didn't see 127 hours for that reason.
Oh, right. Yeah. Because that's something I can't do. That's too excruciating.
I can't. I still haven't seen Goodnight Mommy, which the only reason I haven't seen it is because people said they passed out when they watched it too.
Oh, okay. I'm not that
someone alone. Convinced me that I should watch someone. One of our listeners convinced me that I should watch that movie because I actually really want to see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do it.
Okay. So back to The Exorcist and the phenomenon. So this promo video is from 1974. It was taken at the Westwood Theater, a lot of it, like the beginning of this video, which is in Los Angeles, a theater in Westwood. It's not called the Westwood Theater. And theater employees are describing the fainting customers, how they've never seen anything like it before. One girl they show is crying after leaving the movie. And one girl said she fainted 10 minutes into the movie. And I'm like, "What? How'd you faint 10 minutes into the movie? Nothing happened yet."
Right. She got herself worked up.
The first 10 minutes, they're like on an archaeological dig right. in Iraq.
Yeah.
Why'd you faint, Shelley? Trying to think of a 70s name.
Shelley's good.
Okay. Does that work?
Calm down, Deborah.
Calm down, Misty.
Come on, Karen. Don't be so dramatic.
So it was kind of crazy to see this old footage. And obviously, I loved all the outfits.
Yeah, I love it.
I love watching. 70s is probably my favorite era.
It's so good.
It's so good.
I will always want to see anything from the 70s.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, the horror movies. The 70s are all amazing.
Those are the ones I grew up with. I saw, like, my stepmom showed me all the movies from when she was a teenager in the 70s.
Right.
So I got to watch all of them as a kid. So they have a special place in my heart, anything
right.
from the 70s.
Yeah, there's so many good ones.
Yeah. So people did. There was rumors about theaters having to hand out barf bags because people were also vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me, maybe this is really inappropriate.
Okay.
But I have a really good pea soup recipe that I felt like it's a summer cold pea soup.
Mm.
And I felt like posting it to our Facebook fan friend group.
Okay.
If anyone's interested.
Yeah.
It's really simple, it's really healthy. So Desi, this is right up your alley.
Mm-hmm.
There's a vegetarian
version.
There's a vegetarian version and a vegan version of it. So it's very versatile.
Mm-hmm.
I will be posting my recipe for cold pea soup.
Cool.
Whatever.
It's better than it sounds.
No, it is. It has mint in it.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Mm.
It's really
refreshing.
No, I
love peas.
I do too.
I'm a fan.
Like this movie.
I love
can't
peas
dissuade
with
me.
Mint too. A classic combination.
It's a classic mm-hmm. springtime combo. So in February of 1980, a crime occurred that was tried to be blamed on The Exorcist.
Okay.
Now, this is not an out of the ordinary thing where people try and blame heinous actions on media, right, whether it's video games or the devil's, you know, the satanic panic of the 80s with the music. This case is fucking heinous. So trigger warning, it involves children. Just FYI. In February of 1980, 25-year-old Patricia Frazier cut out the heart of her 4-year-old daughter because she believed that the girl had been possessed by demons. Her defense attorney argued that she was mentally ill and that she was inspired by the movie The Exorcist, which she had just watched 10 days prior to committing the crime. But she watched the TV version of it.
Right. So
how much did it fuck you up?
Maybe I'd buy it if you watch the cinematic release.
Right. Maybe you get a pass on this crime. That actually worked because she was found not guilty by reason of mental illness.
Really?
Yes.
I mean,
can you even?
That seems, I mean, yes, she is mentally ill probably. Right.
But she should also never see the light of day again for that.
Right. I mean, that's pretty gruesome.
That's pretty awful.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The last little tidbit I have about The Exorcist is that I just wrote Billy Graham was not happy with the film.
Fuck him. No one cares. Bye, bitch. Now he's probably getting fucked with a crucifix by the devil. Sorry, no offense.
You know what? No offense.
I'm not a fan.
I'm not a fan either.
One thing I was reminded of when you were talking to me about Mercedes McCambridge is that I read once that the reason that Linda Blair was expected to win the Best Supporting Actress Oscar.
Right.
But it came out that Mercedes had done the voice.
And they didn't like that.
And that sort of put a damper or dampened her chances.
But did they really think that that little girl made that voice?
I don't really know what they thought, but I felt like it seemed unfair because she was the performer. But I guess people were like, well, it wasn't really her, you know. So I just remember that. I don't remember all the details of it, but I had like a vague memory of that being what happened to her. Like she was on the path to win, basically.
Right.
And then when that kind of came out,
they're like, oh, well, it's not.
Yeah. I don't really remember why it wouldn't have been known. Was she not credited? Do you know? Mercedes McCambridge originally or?
No, the Pazuzu lady. Wait, that is the Pazuzu lady. She wasn't credited. She
wasn't credited. So they didn't know, and then at some point it came out during the Oscar campaign, I guess.
I think she actually sued because she wasn't credited.
Right,
but there was some debate about whether or not.
And they might have done some mixture of their voices or something.
I'm not sure. It didn't sound human.
No.
It sounded altered.
I mean, they did something to the voice, for sure. Because Mercedes McCambridge, she has a deep voice, but it's not that.
But that's still Reagan's. I mean, that's still Linda Blair's performance. She's mouthing the words. It's still her face. Look, it's still her body.
Quite honestly, I'm fine with no children winning Oscars.
Really?
Yes. I feel like it's graded on a curve.
Right.
Honestly.
Right.
Like I just
feel it's really good.
It's not
like
they're not good, but I feel like people are overly impressed. It's like when you hear a kid play piano, you're like, wow. And it's like, they're not going to be a successful piano player. You're just impressed because it's like a child doing something that's really shitty.
Right.
Look, I love kids. I'm not a kid hater, but I just feel like it's not the same scale. Like,
right, right.
So I don't know.
Who do you think is the best child?
I'm fine with honorary Oscars for kids. Like Judy Garland got one, right? Like
they should have a separate category, best child performance.
Or and I don't even know because you probably don't need it every year. But like maybe if there's a great performance by a young kid.
Right.
I feel like it's fine if they're in the category, but I want them to be like on the same level of a Meryl Streep. I also feel like there is something about like kids where they're just able, if they're natural and not a child star,
right. They're
kind of able to get this performance that seems revelatory or whatever, like a revelation. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. In general, it's not like I think kids who have won are bad.
No.
But I'm just kind of like, oh, come on. Like,
I'm not going to lie. This is how stupid I am. If I was a 60-year-old actress and I was nominated for Best Actress and I was also up against a 9-year-old kid and I lost to the kid, I'd be pretty sad.
It would be worse than losing to your peer. I mean, come on. All you have, look, all I'm saying is look at someone talking about a kid. when you see these kids and they're like, they're an amazing artist and they've sold paintings for $100,000. And you look at them and you're like, come on. Like, come on.
Like, it's what are not you guys doing? Good?
It's, yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't buy art from a kid, but.
No.
No.
I'm fine. Kids, you've won, whatever. I'm happy for you. But I think it's bullshit.
I'm trying to think of the last.
Kid who won something?
Look, to be fair, Haley Joel Osment was really great in The Sixth Sense. I think he was like 6 years old or something.
Right, but wasn't like part eight. Of it like you like, wow, he was really good.
Right, I've never seen him before. What you're saying. Yeah. Right, he was an unknown. He's fucking adorable. I'm trying to think of like a kid's performance.
I'm not saying the performances aren't even good. Like I know that the Florida Project, the kids were talked about, and then there was that one from, oh God, I can't remember the name of the movie. The little girl, Quijavane.
Wallace. Did she win? No, she was just nominated.
She was nominated for something. I'm not even saying she's the Beast of the Southern Wild. I'm not even saying that she wasn't good. I don't know. I didn't see the movie. But I think part of it is like, oh wow, watching a child perform this really dark role that's it's really heavy and moving.
Right.
You're fooled by your emotions. Look, I'm just saying. Right. You don't have to agree.
Right.
We all have opinions.
No, I get it.
I'm not an Oscar voter. I'm not taking down children.
I'm genuinely just trying to think of like a role where I was like, holy shit.
In general, when I'm mostly moved by a child actor, it's because they're not child actory at all. They just seem like a real kid.
Right.
So I feel like they're just being themselves in a way. And they're just able to be natural on camera.
Which is why I still want Corey Feldman to win an Oscar one day, because he should have as a child. You could see the pain in that kid's eyes in every single role.
But that's not acting. He really was in pain. Like,
give him the Oscar anyway. He's earned it. He has been through enough.
Okay. That was interesting. I didn't know about those murders. That's crazy. I want to read about the gay guy, the gay sex killer.
Paul Bateson. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I also just say that Captain Howdy as a visual is fucking terrifying? That's a woman.
Really?
Yeah. I learned that.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, like that image haunts my dreams.
There's a lot to haunt. Right. Cool. So if you want Rachel's pea soup recipe, you can check out our Facebook friend group on Facebook, Hollywood Crime Scene Friends, I think.
Yeah.
And you can talk to us about this episode and other cases.
And you can weigh in on your favorite child actor performance.
Right. You can tell me off. Tell me I'm dumb and the worst host ever. I don't know. Whatever you want to say.
I love when we get those comments.
Yeah. I literally don't care.
Right.
If you like me and come with me with constructive criticism, I will listen.
Right. But if you come and say, Desi, you're the dumbest cunt ever, and you just say, look, I'm not dumb.
I'm just a cunt.
I'm just a cunt. Yeah.
And now you're about to see that. No. Sweetheart.
Yeah.
And then we have Instagram and Twitter where we post things.
Follow us on all of that stuff.
And that's it. I think we've covered everything.
That's it.
Bye.
Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.